Welcome to this edition of Money Life from Crown Financial Ministries. Dave Ball here, along with Crown CEO and the host of Money Life, Chuck Bentley. And Chuck, today we get to answer a few more of the emails that have come into your inbox. And these are all financial questions that people have written to us. And I know this is one of your favorite types of programs that we get to do.
Well, Dave, I do love to answer our listeners' questions. It gives a very interactive feature to our program because people write me personally at chuckbentley@crown.org, and I get to hear what they want to ask. So it's very helpful to me, and we try to aggregate those questions so that it helps a lot more of our listeners. And we've got some great questions today.
Well, we do, and we got a lot of them, so let's jump right in. The first one is from Catherine, one of our listeners, and she writes, I was married about 2 years ago. I am debt-free, but my husband has a lot of unsecured debt that he acquired prior to our marriage. We've not taken out any debt jointly. If something were to happen to my husband, would I be liable for his debt?
Well, first, Catherine, thanks for writing. It's an excellent question. And there are really two answers to that. Legally, it depends on whether you live in a state that has community property laws, and you need to find that out. You can just probably Google community property laws and the name of your state. I can't do it for you because you didn't tell us where you live. But then if you're in a community property state, then you've assumed that debt by virtue of your marriage. But biblically, because God looks at two people becoming one, I think that you should take responsibility for that debt as a couple, that you should assume that you're both responsible for it. And because of that, set up a plan to get the debt paid off. I think it would help your marriage. I think it would certainly bring the two of you closer together to accomplish that goal together. And it sounds like you're really good with money. So I'd take the lead, invite your husband to learn the things that you know are good for your family, and show him how he, too, can get rid of that debt.
Well, Chuck, you really feel like there is a sense of urgency for people to get out of debt.
Well, I think 2010 is going to be the year the Lord gives us the opportunity to really get our financial house in order. There are so many warning signs. I'm ignoring what's happening on Wall Street. That little rally, I don't think, is going to last forever. But all the other signs with the declining dollar, the federal deficit, many warning signs out there that Christians need to go against the flow and become debt-free right now.
While we're answering your financial questions today, if you have something you'd like to ask Chuck, you can email him at chuckbentley@crown.org. Money Life continues right after this.
You know, God encourages us to invest, and he says in Ecclesiastes 11:2 to spread out or diversify to lower our risk. And one of the best ways to diversify is mutual funds. That's why Crown Financial Ministries offers the Sound Mind Investing Handbook, a step-by-step guide to managing your money from a biblical perspective, written by Austin Pryor. Recently updated to address timely topics, the Sound Mind Investing Handbook is one of the most comprehensive guides available on mutual fund investing. Yet, it's still easy to understand and use. And since this handbook is written from a biblical perspective, it'll teach you how to apply God's financial principles to your investing decisions. So whether you're a beginning investor or one with more experience, the Sound Mind Investing Handbook will help you invest more wisely. To get a copy, go to crown.org or call 1-800-722-1976. That's 1-800-722-1976 or crown.org.
Welcome back to this edition of Money Life from Crown Financial Ministries, and we are answering your questions today. And Chuck, many people are starting this year unemployed. In fact, yesterday I heard a term that I had not heard yet about functional unemployment. Have you heard that term
before? No, explain that one to me.
Functional unemployment is essentially where you've got the unemployment of people that are truly unemployed. And then there's a percentage of people above that who are underemployed. So an engineer might be working at a retail or fast food place.
Sure.
And so that's considered functionally unemployed. And that rate of unemployment is at 17% nationwide right now.
Wow, that's very difficult on a family because I know most people are miserable when they're functionally unemployed. Well, it's a sign of the times, Dave, and some of those issues are ones I hope we're able to help our listeners with.
Well, Lucy in Kissimmee, Florida wrote and had a question. She says, can you point me to any scripture that would encourage me while I'm unemployed?
Well, what a great question, and one I can certainly readily answer. Isaiah 41:10 is a verse that I refer people to so often when they're going through difficult times. It says, so do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be dismayed, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will uphold you with my righteous right hand. And so the Lord is saying, regardless of our circumstances, we do not have to fear and we do not have to be dismayed. We do not have to live in the same state as those who do not know God, because God says he'll give us strength, he'll give us help, and he will uphold us. Proverbs 18:10 says, the name of the Lord is a strong tower, and the righteous run into it and are safe. So when you turn to the Lord, we have an unfair advantage over those who do not know the Lord and can't run to him. So during this time of unemployment, turn your heart to the Lord. Cast your care upon him. Live a day at a time, trusting him to provide for your needs. But let me give you some real practical advice as well, Lucy. I recommend to people who are unemployed to make a personal mission statement that expresses your desires for reemployment so that you can say it in 1 minute or less. Make it, write down a sentence and say, I am looking for a position in blank, whether it's the industry or a certain company or a certain field, and then go so far as to say that pays blank. Because people need to know, are you looking for an entry-level position, an executive position? Basically, what's the parameter of your financial needs? And then answer, are you willing to relocate? So the sentence could be filled in something like this. I'm looking for a position in education that pays the wages of a typical superintendent or a principal, and I'm not willing to relocate, or I'm willing to relocate, whatever that may be. Now, once you've written that statement down, it allows other people to begin to help you. Now, you may not want to be real specific about how much you need to earn, but give them some idea of the field, the income that you need, and what you're willing to do in order to obtain that next position. Because most jobs are not posted. They're called hidden jobs. And other people need to know what you're looking for. I would recommend to write a statement that you could place on the bottom of your outgoing email, almost like a signature line. So every time you send an email, people know exactly what it is that they can do to help you. Most people are willing to help. They just don't know how. I love to help people who are unemployed through networking. It's something that just gives me a lot of satisfaction, but I can help people who aren't able to articulate what it is they really want or need. And then finally, pray about it. Write this statement down and take it before the Lord and say, Lord, these are my desires. I need your help. Will you guide my steps? Will you show me where to go, what to do? And then get in a community of other believers that you can express this need to, that you're willing to pray with, that'll keep you from being discouraged. And then get up every day and work as hard as you can to get that position filled, to get on down the road. Don't be passive. Be very, very aggressive of looking for the position that you believe God is leading you to. And I hope that does encourage you, Lucy.
Well, if you missed any of that information, you can go to crown.org/radio and then click on the related content button for today's Money Life program. Chuck, here's another unemployment-related question from another listener in Florida. And she writes, I'm collecting unemployment benefits, and in order to make ends meet, I clean a house and babysit. I was told I could earn a certain amount of money and not have to report it to the IRS, so I have not claimed that income. But I don't want to dishonor God. Is it right for me not to report the extra income to the IRS?
No, it is not right for you not to report your income to the IRS. The law requires that we report all of our income to the IRS. You know, the IRS publishes some of the reports that they get every year, and one person wrote them anonymously to clear their conscience and said, here's $1,000 that I owe you. I'm sending it to you because I can't sleep at night. If I'm still not able to sleep at night, I'll send you the balance. And, you know, Dave, we are so quick to rationalize our own behavior. And when times get tough, we think we can hedge or do things that are not right. And as Christians, God's Word teaches us to be honest in all of our dealings. And if you're absolutely honest, God is going to honor that and He's going to take care of you. So pay Caesar what you owe Caesar and live with a clear conscience. There's nothing worse than thinking that the IRS is going to come after you someday, even if it's over $5. I would never want to have to be worried about that. So pay them what you owe them and move down the road and live with complete integrity.
Yeah, that's good advice. Chuck, the next question comes from Janet in Idaho, and she writes, "My brother and his wife are both in real estate. After the market crashed, the area where they live suffered a huge decline, and they had to sell their home. This has not only affected my brother, but also our parents, because they are paying for a place for my brother to stay. My parents are 75 years old, retired, and this has really put a financial burden on them. What is my brother's responsibility towards my parents? He's 53 years old, and still trying to sell real estate."
Well, your brother's responsibility is to grow up and be an adult. It's just absurd to think that your 75-year-old retired parents are taking care of one of their children. The Bible says that we're to leave and cleave and that we're to provide for our own needs as an adult. In fact, this scenario should be the other way around. When I originally started reading your question, I thought it was going to be that your parents were suffering because your brother couldn't take care of them any longer. But this picture is completely upside down. And I would give advice to your parents in this case to expect this child and his wife to be responsible for their own financial well-being. Obviously, there's some misplaced dependency there, and it needs to be broken and broken soon. It doesn't matter that the real estate market is bad. They need to find another way to produce their own income and provide for their own housing.
Well, thanks, Chuck, and we'll take a short break. When we come back, we'll answer more listener email. You're listening to Money Life from Crown Financial Ministries.
The price of higher education has skyrocketed. According to a recent Gallup survey, families spend almost $15,000 per student per year of college, and many students often spend years just trying to decide which degree they need to pursue. Wouldn't it be better to help your child figure out what they need to study before they arrive on campus? You can, with the Career Direct Complete Guidance System from Crown Financial Ministries. Unlike other assessments that only examine one or two areas of career selection, Career Direct analyzes personality, interests, skills, and values. Your child can use it to explore career options and find the one God has uniquely gifted them for. Over 150,000 people of all ages have benefited from Career Direct. Check it out at careerdirectonline.org and get a free personality ID profile. That's careerdirectonline.org.
Well, welcome back to this edition of Money Life from Crown Financial Ministries, and we're answering your emails today. By the way, if you have a question, you can send it to chuckbentley@crown.org. And Chuck, this next question comes from another town in Texas. I think they really like you out in Texas.
I hope so, because I really like all of them out in Texas. In fact, I have been to this town.
Well, it's an interesting, I had to look it up because I had no idea where it was. The town is Canutillo, Texas, and it's out near El Paso.
It's actually a little suburb of El Paso and a really neat place.
Well, Roel wrote us from Canutillo, Texas, and he says, "I've come upon a blessing from God of about $8,000. Of course, I plan to give to God's kingdom first, but with the rest, should I invest or should I pay off my credit card debt? I have about $13,000 in credit card debt."
Well, Roel, thanks so much for writing us, and it's great to hear from you. I want to give you some advice that I think will be helpful more than just your specific question. First of all, I think it's wonderful that you're going to tithe on that money that came into your life, and I would use the entire balance to get rid of that credit card debt, because there's nothing that's costing you more than your credit card debt. All other forms of debt are usually less expensive. Even your car loans, Most consumer loans are less expensive than credit card debt, so pay it off. But let me give you some advice that I think so many people need to hear, that there's a logical sequence to follow with how you disperse the income that you have. And you need to start now following a plan that we call the money map. And the map is just a clear process to know the next step that you need to take. And it begins with living on a budget so that you can incur no more new debt. And then once you've established a budget or a spending plan, then your first goal is to save $1,000 so that you can break your habit of depending on credit cards for emergency expenses. Most people today tend to look to their credit limit on a credit card as their emergency savings, and that's actually no emergency savings at all. So if you'll save $1,000, then that means you can break your habit of using credit cards to buy everything. The second step is to save 3 to 6 months of your living expenses in an emergency savings account. Now, this is not an investment. It's not at risk. It's in a place where you can put your hands on it overnight. It's called liquidity. Improving your liquidity means that you haven't put the money away where you would be penalized for taking the money out. That's what emergency savings should be. And you should be able to save 3 to 6 months of that. And then you begin to aggressively pay off all forms of debt. That includes the remaining balance of your credit cards. It includes your automobiles. It includes any unsecured consumer debt, equity, home equity loans, mortgage loans, every form of debt, and get completely debt-free. Then it's right to begin saving for major purchases and long-term investing. And the problem most people get into is they have short-term debt, and then they start putting money away in a long-term fund. Somebody has told them that they needed to start early, so they're putting this money away they can't touch for years without a huge penalty. All the while, they have no cash. So people have these 401k accounts, they have these IRAs, they have all this money set aside that they can't realistically touch or use, and they have no money available to solve emergencies that come up. So make a commitment to follow the plan outlined on the money map. You can order one online at crown.org and begin to do that, and you will see a remarkable difference in your financial condition in a very short period of time.
Chuck, our next question is a debt question as well. It comes from David in Rapid City, South Dakota, and he writes, "We're considering debt consolidation. How should we evaluate companies that offer this service so we do business with the right one?"
I find it very, very difficult to evaluate debt counseling services, and also difficult to find a legitimate debt counseling service because there's hundreds of them in the marketplace right now, if not thousands of them. Their advertising right now is extremely aggressive because they know people are so vulnerable to fall into their traps because they've got such financial stress and pressure. So I would recommend that you not go the route of a debt consolidation plan. Go the route of a debt management plan. And the debt management group that we recommend is Consumer Credit Counseling Service. And you can call them at 800-388-2227, or you can find them online at nfcc.org. And they will help you establish a debt management plan, which will allow you to repay all of your creditors. And it doesn't involve getting into more debt. And oftentimes, debt consolidation plans require upfront fees, you get into more debt, and you get into bigger trouble. The best way out is to break the habit and pay the money back. It's that simple. Break the debt habit and pay the money back.
Well, the information and links to those websites are available at crown.org/radio. And then when you get there, just click on the related content button for today's program. Chuck, our next question comes from Samuel in Las Vegas, Nevada. And he writes, "How can I determine if I need a financial planner?"
Well, typically the financial threshold that a professional planner is looking for is somebody with at least $250,000 in investable assets. So that gives them something to work with and some opportunity to extract some fees from the money that you invest. So if you're looking for a professional financial planner, probably need about $250,000 or more in what they call investable assets. If you have less than that, I would recommend that you simply educate yourself and learn as much as you can about financial planning and investments until you build up to that level. And then there's a lot of places we can recommend that you go to look for a godly financial planner who can help you achieve your goals with outside professional counsel and instruments that will help you achieve what you need to accomplish.
And that information is available again at crown.org/radio, and click on the related content button for today's program. We'll take a short break and be back with more answers to your financial questions when Money Life continues.
You're always looking for ways to save money, right? That's why you clip coupons every week or spend hours looking for deals online. But are you getting the full benefit for your effort? The Couponizer is a way to organize, store, and access all your coupon finds and gift cards with a 22-pocket wire-bound booklet. Once you set it up, you'll be ready to go shopping anytime your busy schedule allows, and it's small enough for you to put it in your handbag and take it with you. The Couponizer system includes the Couponizer, the booklet Your Guide to Smart Savings by Amy Bergen, a pre-sorting mat that matches the categories in the Couponizer, a list pad for tracking your savings and spending, and more, all in a durable carrying bag. You can find out more about how the Couponizer works at crown.org, or you can call 1-800-722-1976. That's 1-800-722-1976 or crown.org for the Couponizer.
Welcome back to this final segment of Money Life from Crown Financial Ministries. And Chuck, let's try and answer at least one more question before we go today. And this question is one that in some form or another we get lots of questions about stewardship in the form of giving. And this comes from Nancy in Big Fork, Montana. And she writes, do you have guidelines that would help a person make a sound decision on giving to a ministry if you question the amount the ministry spends on its administrative costs?
Well, absolutely, Nancy, and I think that's a great question. Certainly, if you're concerned about what a ministry spends on administrative costs, you need to dig deeper. And a couple of things I would recommend you ask is to know something about the people who run the organization. And you may want to ask for a list of references to be sure that the people have credibility and integrity, and there's some background that you can place some confidence in their judgment. Secondly, determine what they're going to use the funds for and find out if they're good at using the funds for what they say they're going to use them for, because what you really want is for them to be good stewards of accomplishing the mission that they set out to accomplish. Even if they have overhead that makes you uncomfortable, but they're very effective at accomplishing their mission, it may not be as big of an issue. So in my view, I would determine who the people are, do they have credibility and personal integrity, and how are they going to use the funds, and are they good at using the funds that way? And then if the Lord's leading you to give to that organization, then do so, and do so cheerfully and without worry or hesitation. It's a little bit misleading to look at only administrative costs. There are far bigger factors that go into a decision about where the Lord would have you put that money.
Well, Chuck, before we close today, I'd like you to take just a minute and let our listeners know about some special events that are coming up in both the Atlanta and Chattanooga areas.
Well, I want to invite all of our listeners to join me. I'm going to personally participate in the God Provides Film Learning Experience Tour. We're going to roll out this tour in Atlanta on Thursday, February the 11th, and our host church is Hebron Baptist Church. And then on February the 18th, I'll be in Chattanooga, and our host church is Ridgedale Baptist Church. Both of these events start at 7 p.m., and we're going to show two of our films in the God Provides series. There's absolutely no charge to attend, but we'd like to know who's coming, and we're going to give you details of how to respond in just a minute. But I want to make an invitation to all of you to come and meet us at one of those locations. If you're near Atlanta or Chattanooga, please come out and join us. I want to meet you.
Well, the Atlanta event, again, is Thursday, February 11th at Hebron Baptist Church. And the Chattanooga event is 1 week later, February 18th at Ridgedale Baptist Church. Again, both events start at 7, and they'll be done by 8:30. You can register by going to crown.org/register to sign up. You'll also find directions and other important information as well. Also, remember, you can find information from today's program at crown.org/register. /radio, and then click on the related content button there on that page. Well, for Chuck Bentley and the entire staff here at Crown Financial Ministries, this is Dave Ball saying thanks for joining us for this edition of Money Life.